Hey, Al McCoy here, and you are listening to the Solar Panel.
Hello, and welcome everybody. No, I'm just messing around. Hello, and welcome everybody into another edition of the Sun Solar Panel. Whether you're watching us on YouTube or Facebook or listening to us on the podcast, wherever you get podcasts, we are very happy to have you, the Flaming Ballers, along with us. I am Greg Esposito, your host. Ahoy, hoy. Alongside me, as always, the Silver Fox, the man gets fined every once in a while on this show because he doesn't exactly have a silver tongue. It's Dave King. Dave, how are you, man?
Good morning, jerk.
Fair enough. And the man underneath it is the Carmel Thunder from down under. It is the one and only Saul Bookman spinning the tunes in the show open. Saul, how are you?
I know. I'm good, right? Man. That's it's groovy tunes, man.
It was a rough night last night, man. You know, I don't know if it's just, you know, a lot of stress and anxiety or what, but man, I couldn't sleep at all last night.
And it the was fact the excitement. That-
Was it excitement for what?
Excitement we haven't had a game today's in like show. A week.
Yeah. For the show. You get to hang out for a group therapy session with all our friends in the chat. And that's what we're here for.
That is definitely contributing to my anxiety for sure. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
That the friends in the chat are going to do group therapy, that's contributing to your anxiety.
No, that you guys, that I have to talk to you guys, that's what's contributing to my anxiety.
I can see that. I am kind of brutal to you and Dave, so my apologies, and at least I'm keeping your therapist employed.
And we're already off to a rousing start this morning because somebody just said I have a big ass forehead.
Like, well, that's true.
All right.
Because you're not wearing the hat
that's
anymore.
Therapy.
Thank you. Yeah.
You know, didn't say it was good therapy.
I said, you know, I was going to get my hair cut, and, you know, and now somebody says I have a big ass forehead. So, which you is, know, you went to ASU.
Well,
shut up.
Not like the hair. It's not like the haircut actually made your forehead bigger. It was always big.
No, it was always big.
He asked him to trim extra along the forehead so he could get that.
Actually, you know what
happened?
I knew
a guy like that once.
Back in the day, I got hit by a rock right here in the middle of my forehead. So my hairline kind of indents. And so I make them take it back to the tip of that. No, seriously, real talk. Otherwise, it'd be about right down here.
So I'm not making fun of you. You just got as a Kaminsky head instead of a forehead.
We love your forehead the way it is.
Hakeem Olajuwon over here. All right. I mean,
it's not like we have basketball to talk about, so let's just keep talking about Saul's forehead for 45 minutes. Why not? Speaking of not having basketball.
Our new sponsor is going to be right here. Here you go. There you go.
I love it.
There's plenty of room for it.
We could get like a NASCAR uniform, two or three sponsors.
I will never, ever not wear a hat again. Here we go.
So, I mean, we could talk about Saul's forehead because there isn't basketball to talk about because of the freaking Washington Wizards. Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah. Monday night, not only do the Suns have to take a beatdown from the Washington Wizards, but then they lose three more games, not on the court, but they get the new Washington Wizards logo here, everybody. It's the DC COVIDs. Seriously, they're the NBA super spreader right now. Anybody that's around the Washington Wizards at any point is now in isolation. And I don't understand the NBA. The contact tracing was really easy. I actually think we have the contact tracing that the NBA did.
It
was that simple. You look at the Suns roster and they played Washington. That simple, right there. That's how we knew that they had to go into COVID protocol. Luckily, everything we've heard, all the reports are that none of the Suns have tested positive for COVID yet, but the league protocols, at least when it comes to everybody but Washington, it says that you have to go, I believe, 5 to 7 days without anybody having it, and that's why we've seen these games delayed. But what bothers me the most is the fact that Bradley Beal was supposedly in the protocol for about 2 days, and then they let him out. I don't understand why he was let out of the protocol. Now he's one of the Wizards reportedly that has tested positive for COVID. The NBA has a problem, and it's not just that COVID's spreading like wildfire. It's the fact that they don't even have their standards set up where it's equal across the board, and that bothers me the most because right now – The only thing that seemed to be able to stop the Suns was not playing, and the Washington Wizards made that happen.
I said last week on this very show that nothing leaves DC unscathed. Nothing. And well, that absolutely came to fruition.
When anyone who's paying any kind of attention realized that playing against Washington Wizards on Monday night was going to be a problem days before the game actually happened, you just got to slap yourself on the forehead and say, what is the NBA doing? And now the Suns are paying for it. It's just, it's ridiculous. All of us could have predicted this. Every single one of us could have predicted this.
Everybody did. Go look back at Twitter. Everybody did. I just don't understand how the league didn't look at Washington and go, this is problematic. We should shut them down so we don't have to shut down numerous teams. And that's the unfortunate reality of what happened. And now the question is, do the Suns wind up replaying those three games? When are they going to fit it in? Is it in the second half of the schedule, which now makes that second half of the schedule even more difficult because you're jamming another three games into what's already going to be compact? It becomes very problematic for a team that has hopes of making the playoffs.
Well, I think that's the reason why they did the schedule the way they did, is to give themselves some leeway so they could you know, catch up on the back half of whatever games were canceled, and maybe potentially even extend the season a week or two, just to make up, give teams time to not have to cram like four or five games in about 6 or 7 days. So I think that's the exact reason why we saw the schedule released the way it was. And so the NBA knew that this was a possibility. They knew this could happen, and that's why they scheduled the way they did. And Shams talked about it on our show a couple months back about the flexibility that the NBA wanted to have on the back half of their schedule for this very reason. They knew this was going to happen to someone sometime, some way. And here it is.
Well, I get the flexibility, but they're also very concerned about the Olympics. And I feel like the only way that they're really going to give enough time in that second half of the schedule is if the Olympics get canceled. Because then they don't have to worry about that date. Like, there's this artificial date that everything has to be done by right now so players can participate in the Olympics. I think they need to give up that dream so they can complete this season in a way that makes sense for every team, especially the ones that are being impacted right now. Because, look, I'm not an expert. We know that. I definitely went to college for almost 8 years, but that had nothing to do with trying to become a doctor. That was just poor learning skills. But
you just wanted the liberal arts degree, and it took you 8 years to get there.
Yeah. Look, so it only took 4.5. But anyways, look, I'm not a doctor, but I don't think we're anywhere near out of the woods. And the meat of this NBA schedule is going to be going on while we're still having a problem in this country. And they're going to need, a decent amount of time. I think they need to just say, look, even if the Olympics are played, we're going to send amateurs. We're not going to send pros, because first and foremost is getting this NBA season done in a fair manner and letting these teams compete the way they need to.
A person in the comment, Bees, asked, does the NBA do flex scheduling like the NFL? And here's the thing. The NFL has a week between games. So you have lots of time to be moving your games around. Like the NFL, they move some games to Tuesdays, some games to Thursdays. Well, the Suns will already have other games scheduled for them. Same with the rest of the league. So that's just the way the problem with the NBA is.
Look, I am quite concerned at the fact that we finally look at a Suns team and we go, could be a top four team in the West. And then you know what? A global pandemic tries to destroy it. You know,
For some reason, I feel like the Suns should be thanking the global pandemic for where they are today, because they were able to be one of the few teams who could focus in the bubble. They went 8-0. There was no distractions. And that kind of guy, they wouldn't have Chris Paul if it weren't for that. I actually think that there's some positives for the Suns that came out of
it. In true Suns fashion, they take what is giveth is taken away too, and by the same force, because they were rolling. And I wonder what this what this potential or what this stoppage potentially does to that, because they were trying to find chemistry. And yes, they had a rough patch against the Wizards in that game last Monday, but they were starting to try to find chemistry. They're trying to define themselves, and then a step back. Maybe the break has a positive impact because they don't have to try to figure out why they got hit so hard in Washington there. But this is just another weird break. And one thing I wanted to ask you guys that is connected to this is Chris Paul not off to the best of starts. I'm not going to rip him a lot going on, but I wonder how much do the peripheral things, as the head of the players union, having to deal with the pandemic, trying to figure out, you know, do they expand rosters? All these questions that come with being the head of the players union from a player's side. Does that distract him from what he's trying to accomplish? Does it add just another difficult layer to what already is tough trying to adjust to a new city, a new team during a global pandemic?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, Chris Paul's been around the block a million times. You know, think about this, okay? We see the stuff on the surface level, okay? It's always the surface level. So that's why people can react the way they want to react and overreact mainly. These guys got endorsement things that they got to do. They got other engagements they got to do. They got private engagements they got to do, whether it be Zoom or not, you know, or in person. Like, they got other commitments. It's not just ball and die. You know what I mean? Like, they got families. They got other things that they got to worry about. So, like, this rubbish about, like, oh, is his mind on it and everything? Like, oh, get out of here with that mess. No, they have other things. Everybody has other things in life. You're still able to do your job. Granted, we're not, you know, insane athletes running up and down the court, but, you know, hey, crunching numbers is almost just important, right, Dave? You big baller.
Yep. Crunching numbers is the only important thing. Somebody in the comments commented this is like another mini training camp. It's actually not. I think all the players are social distancing this week, and so I don't think anyone has picked up a basketball with their teammates around. They're probably individually working out. What we can hope for, though, is that campaign actually gets healthy again, because that actually seemed to derail the Suns' motorboat there, or train on the tracks, or whatever it is. Yeah, don't go there with the motorboat thing. So.
You said it, not me.
You, I don't know what I was thinking. Banana boat. That derailed the banana boat.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
There.
Can we, yeah.
You didn't want to do a
Tempe Town Lake banana boat.
New rule. We are banning the banana boat from mention on the program. Can I get a second vote on that so we can sustain it here, Saul? Yeah. All right. No more banana boat mentions on the program. Would you like to continue motorboating, Dave? Or are you...
All right. So anyway.
God.
Hey, you know what? Let me ask you guys.
Oh my God.
What was worse, the fact that we have gone a couple days without the Suns playing, or their performance on Monday?
Oh man, that performance on Monday felt like they were worried about getting COVID the whole time, huh?
Man, it was.
They were staying as far away from the Wizards players as possible. I think DeAndre Ayton is guaranteed to be healthy with how much space he was giving all the Wizards players.
Oh, here we go.
Look, had you guys not read the CDC recommendations? It was 6 feet or 30 points that you have to remain away from others. So the Suns were 30 points away from the Wizards. That's why nobody's tested positive yet. That's why it was that way. Look, I miss watching it, obviously, but it was a nice palate cleanser after watching whatever that was on Monday night against the Wizards. It was just kind of like, okay, I can mentally walk away from this for a week now and hopefully come back. Because, look, Suns Twitter and Suns fans in general were in a very dark place Monday night. It was not a good place to be. Yeah, all right. And then it sparked a Tuesday that was even worse, which we'll get to the topic as to why it was worse. Let's get into it right now. I believe DeAndre Ayton was why it was worse. And we got back into the same conversation we had. And look, I believe the argument was DeAndre Ayton didn't do enough to keep COVID away from the Suns against the Wizards or something like that. But it was just the same argument that he's not aggressive enough, that he was the reason that they lost by 30 points. Like there's this back and forth. Like it feels like nobody can have middle ground when it comes to DeAndre Ayton. And I don't get it. You don't have to be entrenched on one side or the other. I'm going to say this directly to the camera. DeAndre Ayton's offense is leaving something to be desired. He has been a disappointment on that end of the floor this year because of high expectations due to the fact that he was number one. He's not Luka, obviously, and that's problematic because you could have picked him. And it looks like he's regressed offensively because he can't catch the ball. He's not scoring as well. He's taken a step back. But that does not mean, on the other side of things, that he isn't an impactful player on the defensive end of the floor and a big reason why they've had success on that end of the floor. And that's why I think there's middle ground here. Because at some point, you have to let go of the fact that he was the number one pick. I get it. It's frustrating. But you can't go all or nothing on either side of it. You have to acknowledge both sides. And that's where I think people are forgetting things when they go all in on this and they spiral out of control like we have on both sides.
I'm a perfect example of that. Dave, you and I have gotten into several debates about DA's performance, and I've always defended him for the most part. However, there is no defending the way he's playing on offense. There isn't. When you catch the ball at the top of the key with nobody around you and you kind of pump fake and kind of look for the other option instead of just taking a couple dribbles and pulling up for a little jumper or a floater or trying to dunk it, that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable. And that does show, to your point, Espo, a bit of regression. And it's also a mentality. You know, I think what we saw at the U of A when he was playing for Arizona was he didn't really try to defer to anybody unless he knew he was double or triple teamed. But one-on-one, he never hesitated. He went at that person. And when he got to the NBA, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because he knows that Booker is the alpha dog on the team and now Chris Paul is too. I don't know what's going on, but he needs to stop. He needs to stop deferring to everybody else. When he gets those one-on-one situations, he needs to just beast these dudes and go at them. But he's not. I don't know what's going on in his head. I wish I knew. If I did, I'd probably be making more money than all of us combined right now.
All right. Hey, Duke. Duke said he's been waiting for this, and now he's throwing in a trade of Ayton for Jarrett Allen.
Look,
in a future first. Look,
get out of here.
Put the trade thing on the side, guys. Not you, Dave. I'm saying we can talk about the reality if they're going to think about trading him, but there's more meat on this bone. Like when you look at this, like, is it possible? And I want to know this from both of you, that DeAndre Ayton, maybe everybody's right here. Maybe he isn't aggressive enough on the offensive end, but is it possible to not be aggressive enough on the offensive end and be aggressive on the defensive end? Because I don't feel like he's passive on the defensive end.
No, I don't think so.
I feel like he shows aggression there.
So the thing is, he's trying not to make mistakes. That's the thing. On defense, he knows he's the last line of defense. He knows what he's doing. He knows his role on defense.
Well, Chris Paul also told him that he is the leader on the defense because he anchors everything. I don't know if anybody's ever told him that for the offensive side.
Well, and they shouldn't, because he shouldn't be a leader on offense. He's the center. He's got to receive the ball. He's got to do some. I think he's just afraid to make mistakes. He is so afraid to make mistakes. He's just freezing up when he gets the ball. I think that's obviously a problem. He needs to work through it.
I disagree with the notion that he shouldn't be a leader on the offense. He's one of he should be in on paper, right? He should be the third best offensive option we have.
And he's fifth. He's fifth right
He's not
now.
Even close to that. And I've said since the beginning of the season, if DA doesn't find a 2015, 25, and 10 level, this Suns team is going to be middle of the pack in the top eight of the West. They just will.
And The problem with DA not stepping up is that you live and die by Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges offensively right now, which is a lot to put on Cam Johnson, who's only in his second year and still trying to figure out what he is in the long run here. So that's why you have such uneven play. You look at it and the games that those two guys, at least one of them, doesn't do something and do something big, they struggle, which was the case in Washington. And then, that's what happens when DA isn't engaged on the offensive side and doesn't go all in on it. Now, I name drop a lot on this show, but this time I'm going to name drop and audio drop because I got a fun new toy and I want to play this. This was a discussion on the Burns and Gambo show on Thursday, I believe, about DeAndre Ayton.
Right. Gambo and Espo. Right.
Gambo and Espo. Am I playing? Here, that's this should be Greg the discussion. Zito's a smart guy.
I don't know what the hell you're doing, Espo.
He's just pumping himself up right
now. Did I not get the right sounder here? God, I can't even hear it. So,
Greg Esposito's a fun guy.
Is that what that? Okay. Well, there was a whole discussion about.
You're just sitting there pumping yourself up.
Look, I could do it again. There we go. Another one for you. There,
Nope, we didn't hear it.
There's
a poor guy.
There is no reason that both of those things can't be true at the same time. I mean, there's no reason that they can't. In fact, I'm reading a tweet from our friend Greg Esposito, who, used to work for the Suns, covers the Suns, talks about the Suns, used to work for us. He's kind of.
Oh, bummer. You just cut it off, man.
I didn't. I don't know what. This is what happens when you get new technology.
New technology.
And but hey,
give me the cliff notes. What did they say?
Yeah. Well, can you just paraphrase for us?
The paraphrase, they were just saying that, in agreement that DeAndre Ayton can both be bad offensively and good defensively. But yes,
right. Gambo and Espo. Right.
There you go. The Gambo and Espo show. Now I got all sorts of drops here, that I can mess with you guys. I'm trying to play with the new equipment here, and it obviously doesn't work fully. But
to tell us you're gonna leave us for radio.
Yes, the Gambo and Espo show.
We'll just take Dave Burns. That's cool.
That Greg Esposito guy is smart. So anyways, the point being, look, I get it. People are frustrated, and I am as well. People will call me a DA lover. They're gonna get on me for it, I'm sure. But look, he has been bad offensively. And I don't know I don't think it's by design that they've gone away from him offensively. I think it's because that he's just not being aggressive like people are saying. I just don't think it falls on the defensive end of the floor, and both things can be true. And if Suns Twitter and Suns fans in general don't realize that's the problem here. Both things can be true. You can be upset with his offense and okay with his defense. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with feeling that way.
I agree. Go ahead, Dave.
We've been talking about it for weeks, and it didn't change just because of one bad game. I mean, let's talk about the fact that Mikal Bridges also disappeared in that Washington game, and Devin Booker also disappeared in that Washington game. Devin Booker had zero assists. Mikal Bridges had more fouls than shots in the first half. Everybody disappeared in that Washington game, and yet all of Suns fandom was all over DA, the youngest player in their rotation, the 22-year-old in the rotation. Everyone else is older. Why is it his fault? Plus, the Suns are freaking 7-4, and they're the best team they've been in years, and he is a big part of that. No, I don't expect him to be a top option on offense because he's not ready for it, but I just don't expect him to be awful on offense. He needs to get better on offense. He needs to get more decisive. He needs to figure out where he fits, and he will figure that out. And I think it's as much as Chris Paul's responsibility as it is DA's. Why are we absolving Chris Paul of not making him better on offense? He should be spoon-fed some things to make it easy.
I would say this: at the bare minimum, you need this is not even debatable, you need DeAndre Ayton to be a threat on offense. What level of threat? I don't really care. But you need to know that there is a presence inside that they have to account for. And he was, for a large part of the early games, you know, every time there would be a pick and roll, he would draw two to the basket because nobody wanted to give up that easy deuce. Now it's starting to kind of fade away a little bit, and he's getting more options and more leeway to score. Now you have to prove that you can score and make yourself a threat, because if you don't, then you just become a good defensive big. And that's okay, but you need more on offense. You just do.
Hey Duke is asking the question, would we be a better team with a different person playing there, playing than Aiden? Well, it depends on the player, doesn't it? If you get an Anthony Davis in there, yeah, the Suns would be a better team. If you get a Jarrett Allen in there, no, I don't believe the Suns would be a better team.
Well, let's talk about it, because that premise is obviously coming with probably the thought of, do you consider moving DeAndre Ayton at some point and potentially some point this season? Because let's be honest, the Suns in trading for Chris Paul opened a 2-year window that they are trying to win in, because there's no guarantee that Chris Paul stays beyond that. So you have basically started the clock on a window. If you do not feel that DeAndre Ayton is going to develop offensively in that time, do you consider moving him for somebody potentially flawed still, but more established in who they are and what they can do both defensively and offensively? Do you consider that at the trade deadline?
I know I don't consider LaMarcus Aldridge.
Jesus. Blades, right?
Man, come on, bud.
Well, like, it depends. Are we getting LaMarcus from 10 years ago?
Would you take Karl Anthony Towns? That is a good question. That is a very good question. He might need to be moved. He's in a spirally situation right now. Would you take him? Great on offense, but not good on defense. I mean, I really think if you're going to be talking about the playoffs, you need to be really good on defense. And Karl Anthony Towns is not.
Well, but would Karl Anthony Towns be a better defensively because of the surrounding cast around him that is good defensively?
Potentially, but none of us have seen Karl Anthony Towns be that back line anchor. I mean, that makes defense good.
Ifs and buts were candy and nuts, then every day would be Christmas. Who cares about this? DeAndre Ayton is not going anywhere. Let's just say it like that.
Well, and in a vacuum, sure. Yeah, okay. You could trade DeAndre Ayton for Karl Anthony Towns. The math doesn't work. That's the other problem here. And the benefit of DeAndre Ayton is you're getting a guy that has certain talents that can be, you know, as Chris Paul's calling, the anchor of that defense, at a price that you're not breaking the bank right now. Like, yes, there's a decision coming up on a contract extension for him, but right now, cheap enough that you can have him and you can have Chris Paul's contract, you can have Devin Booker's contract in there. And that's the other part of this. You're not just going to magically jam another max guy in here without gutting the depth that's gotten you here too. So that's why none of this talk makes a lot of sense to me in terms of trading him.
Right. Plus now, we're 11 games into the season, and some players take a little bit longer to adjust than others. And I don't think we are, you know, breaking any news when we say DA has taken a little bit longer to adjust to certain situations than other teammates. Mikal Bridges, for example, I think that's what frustrates everybody, is Mikal Bridges is right there, same draft class, a little bit older. But you know, his projection is steadily rose over the last 3 years, and DA's is kind of, you know, it's kind of gone up and down. And so it's frustrating for fans. I mean, this DA is a frustrating player. Like, that's not debatable. He's frustrating.
You see the talent.
Because of the expectation, but also what he provides. And so he has grown defensively. We got to give him that. He has grown by leaps and bounds from his first year in the NBA to now. Like, where he is the anchor of that defense. But offensively, you just need more.
I agree. And it's not like this is code, that's just the way it is, Dave.
Code JJM says Ayton's problem is his motor, and nothing bothers me more than this. Oh my gosh. This take, nothing personal, Code JJM, nothing personal. There's a lot of fans who believe the same thing. Just because a person is not moving at 100 miles an hour does not mean he has a motor problem. Yeah. DA has a confidence problem. He has a focus problem. He has a what do I do when I get the ball here versus there problem, but he doesn't have a motor problem. He just doesn't want to screw up. I really think, I know Saul disagrees with me, but I really think he is frozen into inactivity when he catches the ball because he doesn't know what he's doing.
I don't think it's focus. I think that word right there is what throws me off a little bit. I agree with everything else you said, but the focus part I don't agree with, because I think he knows when to expect all these things to happen. It's just he doesn't have a plan of attack. And I don't think that's really a focus. It's just confidence, as you said, can lead to a lot of those problems. You know, if you look at the Denver game, you know, when this motor thing, big guys typically just don't dive on the floor for loose balls. They just don't. It's a long fall from the top, right? But he was diving for loose balls in Denver. You know, there was one play in the corner where he dove on the ground and saved the ball and led to a critical 3-point shot by Booker. Like, I too get irritated about the motor thing. I'm like, some, you know, if you looked at Hakeem Olajuwon, you know, his lack of demeanor, he was very stoic on the court. What, does he not have a motor? That dude was dropping 40 points on everybody's head. Shut the heck up with that mess. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't understand the he doesn't dunk hard argument either. A layup is worth 2 points too. Like, I get it. There's a lot of problems here. We're 11 games in. Like, everybody was just looking for a scapegoat after a really bad loss, and it was easy to point the fingers there, and that's fine. That's going to be the prerogative of some people. Other people aren't, but I think the truth still is in the middle. He's not great offensively. He's good defensively. He needs to grow in both areas. It's that simple to me, and I don't know why it keeps coming back to the same argument over and over and over again about this guy. And I think we're destined to go through this until he either steps up or he leaves town. Those are the two options that I think change this for him. Now, everybody is down on this Suns team for some reason. I get it was a rough stretch right before having to take a break due to the Washington Co-Wizards visiting or playing the Suns. And I get it. It's been a difficult run for the Suns, but 7-4. They still, you know, in games against the elite that they've played in the NBA, the better teams, they have played very well, right?
And yeah, the Suns have actually had one of the top 10 toughest schedules starting out the season. I mean, really, Detroit and Washington were the first easy ones on the slate, and they crapped the bed over those ones. But those were the first easy games the Suns played, even including preseason.
Yeah, no, and you know, it's interesting to me that I think sometimes it's the old you can't see the forest through the trees, right? You can't see it because you're so close to it. And us as Suns fans have that problem. But when you take a step out, who has been one of the toughest critics of the Suns over the last decade, not named Amin?
That would be one Mr. Bill Simmons.
Yes, there has not been a guy that has taken this franchise to the woodshed more often than Bill Simmons, right? And this week he comes out and he has nothing but glowing things to say, saying, quote, I'm not even going to try to play sound because we saw what a train wreck that was earlier, right? So I'm not even going to try to play that. But he says, I love the Suns. I think they're the team to watch, he said on his Book of Basketball podcast this week. One of many nice things. I mean, there's some very long, nice quotes where he talks about how he thought the Chris Paul trade was a desperation trade. But when you watch the first 11 games, you see what an impact he's had on this roster. Like, glowing praise from a guy who has done nothing but hate on this franchise. We've seen it from a lot of people nationally that the Suns have been talked about in a very positive manner, and a lot of respect being given to them. Are Suns fans, ourselves included, too close to this? Is it simply skewing the perspective of a 7-4 start?
Absolutely, the Suns fans are too close to it. It is funny. It's like we're in uncharted territory as Suns fans. It's like we're so used to a bad team and making excuses for a bad team and the national press hating the Suns and having to be on defense around the Suns all the time. It's that's the world that this generation of Suns fans is used to. Now all of a sudden the national media loves the Suns, and you're watching and you're thinking, I think Suns fans thought a 7-4 team, everybody be playing to the max of their abilities. Nobody would be having off games. Everything is roses and daisies. And we just haven't been around a good team. Good teams actually play bad sometimes too. And good players on good teams have some bad games. I mean, did you think everyone loves Paul George in Clipperland all the time? Did you think everyone loves Kawhi Leonard in Clipperland all the time? No, there's fans that get all over him too. And Suns fans are just not used to this. And so we're freaking out, not sure why the team is still sometimes playing bad, even though they're a good team. And it's definitely an overreaction. Suns fans are harder on the Suns than any other team's fans are on the Suns. It's hilarious.
I mean, yeah, I think a lot of fan bases feel that way about their own team because they're so invested, at least in the NBA is what I've noticed. And yeah, we've been scarred for 10 years. You know, it's been, you know, it's been a lot of promise and hope and then a lot of failed expectations for a lot of these teams. And so, I mean, I understand Suns, you know, the Suns fans' angst when it comes to any hiccups that come along the road. But This team 7-4, and Dave, you know, I know we talked about this in our text thread yesterday about whether or not we were going to talk about this, but this team 7-4 is different from last year's 7-4. It's not a fluke. It is what it is. They are 7-4. They had some stinkers of some games, like absolutely. But I would rather them have a stinker of a game than lose to a team that has not so much talent and they just aren't as good as them. You know, if that makes sense, yeah. You know, like last year when they lost to Memphis all those times, I was like, this team should be so much better than Memphis. I don't understand what's going on. It's just because they just weren't. Now they are. For whatever reason, you know, Chris Paul adds to the mix, but they got a lot of confidence in the bubble. And I feel like this isn't fool's gold as much as it was last year.
Look, I'm going to as much as I went at the Suns fans from time to time because of DA opinions, I'm going to defend us as a group when it comes to the way they react to this and the way we look at this, because yes, it's nice to be 7-4, but we've seen fool's gold before over the last decade. We've seen good runs that get your hopes up and then have them dashed by having 8-game losing streaks and big falling off the cliff, or winning 48 games and missing the playoffs because you just weren't good enough to get that extra win. I understand the angst and the anger and the questioning when it comes to this group. Yes, is this team at 7-4 better than last year's team at 7-4? Yes, very much so. But one injury away and it could wind up going that same route. You hope that the depth would prevent it from happening, but it could. And I get why Suns fans are so they have so much energy pent up because of this last decade, and all they want is a winner. You go from being one of the best teams win percentage wise in NBA history, and now all of a sudden you're one of the bottom feeders and you don't know how to deal with that. You sit there with that for 10 years and you look at this team and you go, this team could be it. You could wind up going back to the Western Conference Finals if everything falls the right way. So being hypercritical of it is coming from a desire to want to see that so badly. And that's, I totally and 100% understand that. I am tired of being disappointed by a Phoenix Suns team
you hit the nail on the head with the expectations going deep in the playoffs. Last year's 7-4 start was a hope that the Suns might make the playoffs as an eighth seed, you know, even, and that 7-4 start was on the backs of Aaron Baines doing something he had never done before. Ricky Rubio playing above his head a little bit. Even Devin Booker in that 7-4 start was hitting 50% of his threes, was doing everything perfectly, the best he'd ever played. It was a little bit unsustainable. And now this year, the 7-4 start has Devin Booker playing poorly, Chris Paul playing, I think, poorly, DA playing poorly, and yet still 7-4. And national media are saying this is not only a good team, this is a deep playoff team potentially, because they're built for the playoffs. That's what's so different about this team than prior years. Even that 48-34 team, we were just hoping they would qualify for a playoff round and still didn't think they would go deep in the playoffs. This team is actually built for that.
So, yeah, Dave,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so Dave, what you're saying is
that's why that Greg Esposito's a smart guy.
Right?
I'm not going to echo Gambo. I'll tell you that one.
Yeah. I'll say this. You know, I think this little break in the week might end up being the best thing that could have happened to the Suns, because I think there's a part of you that, you know, you're playing every day, and for 11 straight games, you're playing every other day, and you get into this mode, and there's a part of it that feels like, you know, it's just, we're back to normal. Outside of the lack of fans, you know, your daily routine's not too messed up. It's about the same. And now it's taken away. And I think there's something to be said about going out there and really relishing the fact that you get to play basketball for a living. You get to do this on a day-to-day basis. Now that you're holed up at your house and you can't see your teammates and you can't talk crap on the court and you can't play the game that you love, I'm hoping this kind of refocuses everybody to really avoid these Washington-type losses, these Sacramento-type losses, losses that should not come about at all. Because this team is too good for that now. And I think now they'll take every game as like these one game sets, because you never know if you're even going to play the next game due to COVID. So,
hey, we need to recognize Perplex Damage. I know, Saul, you put the point up on the chat. Thank you very much for your donation, Perplex. We always love being able to buy a few more tacos. Thank you. If I'll double your donation if the Suns win on MLK Day. That's I just want to see them win. They're supposed to play Memphis. It's supposed to be on national TV. I don't know if the NBA is going to feel any extra pressure because it's a national TV scheduled game to get them out there. I know there is a 5-day window that a team is supposed to be doing contact tracing in. If the Suns don't have any positives, it is quite possible they'll play on Monday. If the Suns don't have any, that doesn't mean they won't go positive later. The Wizards didn't get any positives until after playing the Suns, but we all know they had them. They just weren't testing positive yet. So it could be the Suns play on Monday. That doesn't necessarily mean they're completely in the clear. And that would be against Memphis on the road in Memphis.
The Sun Solar Panel, the show where if you donate money, we buy tacos. I love how many random taglines Dave gives us the joy of having on this show. A reminder, if you like to support the show.
What do you want me to say, that I'm going to motorboat with the money or something? What?
I don't know. I just simply echoed what you said. I like that I have that opportunity. If you'd like to support the show, hit that join button on Facebook, or excuse me, on YouTube. And also, you can join via the podcast feed. There's a link in the description of each show that you can join there as well. Become a supporting member of the Flaming Ballers by doing that. Also, just don't forget to leave a 5-star review on the podcast where you listen to podcasts as well. We'll have a special reading of a 5-star review later in the show. Final thoughts when it comes to Bill Simmons and being positive about the Suns. Does it surprise you that the tone of the national media has shifted so vastly in favor of the Suns, like it has with Bill Simmons?
It doesn't surprise me, because it's Chris Paul and it's Devin Booker. Devin Booker got everybody's attention this past year, made the All-Star game. I think he's a shoe-in as long as he plays like himself, which he hasn't quite been yet. But as long as he plays like himself, he's going to be in the All-Star game again. And Chris Paul is just the king of the league, pretty much. So I definitely think that that's why the Suns are getting more national recognition. It's niche to love Mikal Bridges. It's niche to love Cam Johnson. It's more common to be disappointed in DeAndre Ayton than to support him nationally. That's always like, and there's this, and there's that, and there's this. But the center of it is Devin Booker and Chris Paul, and that's why the Suns are getting this national recognition.
I think the sum of their parts is more consistent and deeper than they have been in quite a while. And I think the national media has picked up on that. I think they're a far more consistent team than they have been in the past. And you can rely on them to, you know, play with effort for the most part and play and be competitive in a lot of these games. And obviously we've had some outliers, you know, we've had the Clippers first half and obviously against the Wizards, those are the two that really stick out in my mind so far this season. But outside of that, they've played some really good basketball so far. And yeah, I think it's going to be great. Also, I want to go back to something. I know this is kind of off topic. This goes back to the D'Anon kind of stuff. But somebody said that D'A is probably lacking confidence because he's reading Twitter too much and he needs to focus on the game. And that is just an example of conspiracy type crap. D'A hasn't even posted on social media since October, especially on Twitter. So come on, stop making stuff up. Let's have
I do think. Look, I obviously I don't think Suns Twitter ruined DA. I think that's feeling too much about yourselves on being on Twitter and all that. But
yes.
I will say it's foolish to think that he doesn't look at social media, even if he doesn't post. I think he does. All the players do. They all look at their phones after the game and they want to see what's said of them. And only some players actually go after tweeters. And obviously. KD has burners and all that stuff. So I do know that these guys are aware of the feeling, but I know it's ridiculous to think that they'll never be affected. Cyberbullying has been around for a long time.
And come on, DeAndre Ayton's game isn't suffering because people are saying mean things online. If that happened, I'd never do this show because all there is mean things said about me on the internet.
I mean, for real, we started off this show with somebody mocking my forehead.
Like, dude, you guys are not 22 tomorrow. Years old anymore. I mean, there are some very thin-skinned 22-year-olds on Twitter as well that are not named DeAndre Ayton that can't.
Well, maybe I'm thin-skinned. How about that, Dave? How about that?
I'm closer to 22 than either of you guys, and I'm not going to let it impact me. It's I don't know. I like that D'Anon. Maybe we'll pick one conspiracy theory from the internet about DeAndre Ayton each week and dive into it here on the Sun Solar panel. I agree though. Come on, like I get it. It hurts his feelings a little bit, but it's not going to tank an NBA player's game. And if it does, there's a bigger problem we have to address right now than anything we've talked about. If that's what would be,
I'm not going to make assumptions about what he's doing in his off time to really validate my thoughts about his play. I'm just not going to do that. I'm just going to see what it is on the court. And that's that.
I love that we'll make assumptions about what Devin Booker is doing off the court with a certain girlfriend, but we are not going to make any speculation about what's going on with him. The next thing on the docket, and we'll make this one quick because it's not a huge topic, but NBA and NBA Players Association is in discussion to add another two-way contract to the rosters. So some of these teams who wind up with players in the COVID protocol will have enough players to field a roster. Who would be the worst guy the Suns could add right now that's available onto this roster with that two-way spot?
Meta World
the
Peace.
Worst?
The worst.
Jimmer. Meta World Peace.
Jimmer. I like the Jimmer one because Devin would be about to have his first big breakout game and Jimmer would decide to go 0-for-12 from behind the
Oh, my God.
I actually agree with somebody in the chat, one of the Flaming Ballers. I think it's Isaiah Thomas because we've seen not the Hall of Famer, the IT that was here in Phoenix. We've seen what can happen when a Phoenix Suns team has some pretty good chemistry and you throw IT into the mix. I think that would be a big mistake. And he's actually looking to try to get back in the league. There was talk of that this week. So I certainly think he would probably be the worst. But
Blaze suggests Jamal Crawford. Yeah. Dude went to training camp with the Nets on a 10-day this past spring, and he pulled a hamstring immediately. I mean, that's like one of us joining. I'm real sorry, man, but that Jamal Crawford just isn't going to make it again. Yeah. Richard Dumas, he's posting in Facebook Suns groups doesn't mean Richard Dumas is ready for the league again either. You know, I'm shocked that no one has thrown Alan Williams out there. Alan Williams is the poster child for two-way contract additions that could make a difference for the Suns.
He injured himself in Russia, so not a
I really hate that. He didn't injure himself. It's not like he took a bat and swung it at his own knee.
He was injured. He was injured in Russia. All right. Which sounds worse. It sounds like he went to invade Russia and he's injured now. He's playing basketball in a Russian league and hurt his leg. And he had to have surgery.
Rolalde Rolalde.
He actually might have a better jumper than Ronde.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's his brother, Rolalde.
By the way, you guys bring up. Oh God! Don't ever make that sound again, Dave. We've had this chat. That's when you go on the penalty.
Rolalde.
You guys bring
some now. We're going nuts now.
Hey. To go back to the Twitter, to the Twitter comment and thin skin and Jamal Crawford being mentioned. I said a couple years ago, I've seen enough Jamal Crawford. I don't need to see any more of him in a Suns uniform on Twitter, right? Isaiah Thomas yelled at me on Twitter and immediately unfollowed and muted me. Blocked me, I believe. Muted, excuse me.
Why?
Because they're boys. Jamal Crawford and Isaiah Thomas are boys, and he didn't like the fact that I said I'd seen enough of Jamal Crawford in a Suns uniform.
I got blocked by Kobe Simmons on Twitter because I said that he's not going to last in the league if he can't develop a jumper. Guess what? He's not in the league anymore.
You know, I got blocked by IT years ago when I called him and Gerald Green the chuck wagon coming off the bench.
Ariel in the chat says, Kendall Marshall is the solution. We have our winner. If there is anybody I never want to see on a Suns roster again, it is one Kendall Marshall. And then somebody suggests sign Kendall Jenner as well.
Kendall Jenner. You can put her in a little uniform.
Hey, there's no fans in the stands. If she can sit courtside, I'm okay with that.
Hey, look, it probably gets Devin back in the swing of things. So we're all right with that. Hey, you know what time it is? It's time for the best segment on the Sun Solar Panel. It's time for Espo's Big Board. That's right. And I'm coming to you to give you guys some solace this week. I know no Suns basketball, a lot of hate on DA. So this week's is the top five centers to make that were on the Suns roster at one point to make you feel better about the
unpaid. I just want to say, Espo, before we get into this list, and I saw this list obviously before we went up, there is one glaring omission, and I am severely disappointed in you that you did not pull this out of your bag, but we'll get into that afterwards.
All right. Well, I look forward to it. Number five, Jake Foscoe started 43 games in 2003-2004, averaged 7.4 points, 6 rebounds and an assist. Yeah. So if you're feeling bad about DeAndre Ayton, you could have this guy starting at center for you as well. And now he's in his 40s. So I think the numbers would be even worse. So number four on the big board, it's a guy we know well, and we saw him on Monday in Washington. Him with the Co-Wizards, it's Robin Lopez. In 2010-11, started 56 games, averaged 7.2. If he averaged 72
points, he'd be a different discussion. Why is he on this list if he's averaging 72 points?
7.2 points, 3.6 rebounds, and an assist. So, yeah, you want to complain? You could always have Rolo back. Good guy, not as good of a player for the Suns.
The quietest 72 points a game you've ever seen.
He didn't even know what happened. Number three on the list, William Bedford. Number six pick in the draft. He went in 1986-87, started 18 games, averaged 9 points, 6.4 rebounds, and an assist. So, yeah, when you're feeling bad about DA, remember, you could have this guy in the short shorts rocking it for the Suns as a starting center. This is a trip to the not-too-distant past that makes you remember how bad Suns center play was at one point. Number two on the list, this is somebody Dave and I remember well.
Earl Barron.
Earl Barron, 2010-11, started 7 games, at average 4.4 points, 5.4 rebounds, and not even half an assist. So, yep, you could start Earl Barron. And number one on the list, a man that looks like he should be playing rec league basketball and not being anywhere near the NBA, a YMCA-er for life, it's Danny Shays. He, in 94-95, he started 27 games for the Suns, averaged 4.6 points, 3.1 rebounds, and an assist and a half. So remember, when you're feeling down about DeAndre Ayton, we could be starting almost any center from the Suns past and be in a worse position. So
who are they missing?
Do I have this wrong? But Tim Kempton?
I don't think Kempton ever started games, though. I went with guys.
Not once he didn't start a game. Maybe?
No. Just once. Timmy, a former post-game host with me, but
bless his heart.
Look, let's just say this.
This is hot.
Tim is most remembered for hopping over a bunch of chairs on the sideline to save a ball and then stepping in it and getting in the chair folded on him during that. Okay. So that's true. Jermaine.
Hey, what about, why don't we just go with Tom Chambers while we're talking about Suns broadcasters right now? Chambers would today's center. He's basically Kristaps Porzingis, isn't he?
Yeah, but TC wasn't a center. He was a power forward.
I know, but in today's game, he could play center.
Yeah, and he would nutmeg somebody with a dunk like he did with Mark Jackson. He did that one time,
and now he's this fantastic dunker.
Yeah, fantastic. And he was kept rising. It's like he climbed up Mark Jackson's body.
It was one of the greatest dunks of all time. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, it's not like this dude was Sean Kemp out there.
Have you guys watched The Price is Right, right? You remember the yodeling guy climbing the mountain? That was DC. He just kept going up, and then he fell down to dunk.
Exactly. Once he went over Mark's head, then he went back down the other side.
Pat Burke. That's a good one. Poor Pat Burke.
He ended up hating being the, because he was always the they only put him in the blowouts, and everybody cheered, chanted for him to shoot threes. He hated it, actually, his years.
Who is this? Corey in the chat says, one of the flaming ballers says, Shays does my taxes. If that is true, I need to know if that's actually true.
Corey, is that true?
Wow. Shays is now doing your taxes. All right. I'll give you props for that. That's a true Suns fan when you trust one of the worst centers in franchise history with your financial needs. All right. I'm glad if that's the truth. So that is your Espo's big board, the top five centers to make you feel a little bit better about DeAndre Ayton. So
Jermaine O'Neal, we had him for a year too.
Yeah, Jermaine O'Neal, that was past his usefulness. That was special from Lance
O'Neal.
Do you remember Lance Blanks? Yeah, that was the kind of signing that Lance Blanks would make. So. Do we have an Imagine This, Saul?
Here we go. Bam. Here we go. Imagine This.
We need to put Saul's face in there.
Probably could.
Saul's face on Gene Wilder. Imagine this. All right. What's our Imagine This?
Imagine this week. What if the Suns actually were a top three team in the West? How would you celebrate? How would you celebrate a top three seed in the West if they were to clinch such a thing this year?
With a cocktail of tears and vodka, because I know it's not ending in a championship.
I know how Dave would celebrate.
How would Dave celebrate?
You'd be motorboating.
No matter what. But if the Suns get a top three seed, what I'll celebrate with is taking a few days off of Twitter, because they'll inevitably lose one of those final games by 20. Won't affect their seed at all, but someone's going to complain that DA is still playing bad. So I'll celebrate by taking a few days off of Twitter.
There'll be a Zapruder film breakdown of why DA was the reason that they lost a meaningless game by 20 points. You're right.
Exactly. And that'll be Duke, the only thing people talk about between the end of the season and the start of the playoffs.
Hey Duke coming in hard in the chat. He says he's going to celebrate by going to Hooters with the fellas. Who would have guessed that was going to make an appearance in here? Perplexed Damage says Oliver Miller sold me my truck. So we're going.
And it was repossessed 9 months later.
Jesus. I feel sorry, Perplexed. I've got to respond to that.
What did Richard Dumas sell you?
Perplexed, let me just say this. Maybe you shouldn't be donating as a flaming baller if your truck's being repossessed. If you'd like a refund, please reach out.
maybe the donation will go into his donation fund.
How would you celebrate if the Suns were a top three team?
Oh, dude, I would do it like my man Justin Spears did when the Lakers won the championship. I'd have the champagne out and I just douse myself.
That's sad that the bar is so low in Phoenix that Saul's like, I'm going to celebrate like my good Lakers fan did the championship when they're a top three team in the West going into the playoffs.
That's all I got, Espo. Damn. Okay. It's been 10 years.
Give me the goggles. Give me the Dom Perignon.
Social distancing. At home alone, I'm going to throw some champagne on myself.
I'll be right here on this show.
I'd say Saul would shave his head, but he's halfway there already. So you know,
yeah, no, I'm not sure. I did that for 12 years in the military. I'm never going back. So.
Oh, halfway there already. Shut up, Espo. You got lots of hair, so you get to make fun of everybody else.
It's going nice and gray too, so we'll have that. You guys can.
Yeah, don't talk to me about that. Don't talk to us about that.
You're 15 years older than me, Dave. It's all right that you have gray hair. It's not.
Yeah. Oh, problem. I know. It's fine. Silver like, fox.
So let's wrap this up. I did tease earlier. We do appreciate it when you leave us a 5-star review on the podcast. It helps us with whatever those algorithms are. Look, I don't understand analytics very much. I understand algorithms even less, but I do know that giving us a 5-star review helps us with the algorithms in the podcast. And we got a great one from Dash ZNT on Apple Podcasts. He says, great stuff. Awesome podcast. Always great content. And always super entertaining. Fellas, keep it up and appreciate all you do. 5-star review. So thank you.
Hey, thank you.
And, you know, our old friend Tim Tompkins used to send swag out to people when they got a mention on the show. I don't have the time for that. So virtual high five to anybody that leaves a 5-star review. We appreciate you very much. And if Tim's bored and listening, he can send you something because I think he still has boxes of stuff sitting at his Florida house. So any final thoughts, gentlemen? We'll start with you, the Carmel Thunder from Down Under, self open.
I actually start with Dave. I got to clear my throat.
All right. He's got to do a Dave King. So, Dave, go ahead. What are your final thoughts today?
My final thoughts is I really hope the Suns start playing basketball again and we start talking about something other than DA. That'd be great.
I think that is a good thing to wish for.
Yeah, I will back that up. I just want to see them play on Monday. I think Martin Luther King playing on Martin Luther King Day is a very important day, especially in this climate right now, how this country is and how kind of crazy it's been out there. So playing on Martin Luther King Day against the Memphis Grizzlies, obviously where Martin Luther King was. So I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I hope to see that as well. We won't do picks this week because we don't know what games will be played. And last week, I think I had him 4-0, Saul 3-1, and Dave 2-2. And all we know is COVID won the week. So we all lost last week. So we won't do picks. We'll bring that back once we know they're actually going to play some basketball
games. Yeah, that was a death knell. We shouldn't be doing that anymore. Yeah.
No more picks.
I thought we were going to do the one chip challenge, whoever lost. Now we don't get that. We don't get to watch Dave choke to death on the program.
No, because COVID takes away your taste buds, and that's it. We wrapped it all up this week.
Yeah,
I have no taste for it.
Didn't.
You can follow Dave at Dave King NBA. The NBA is there because he likes to pretend we actually get to watch basketball. I guess it is the Carmel Thunder from Down Under, Saul Bookman. You can find him on Twitter at Saul_Bookman. The underscore is there because the Saul and the Bookman are in a lover's quarrel right now. So hopefully they'll get back together next week. You can find me at Espo. You can find the Suns at Suns Solar Panel on Twitter. You can find us there and interact with the show. So until next time, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, and ahoy hoy. Yeah.